Redbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota on Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit toyotaonnicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com. Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. And today with us, we have Carl Keating, a Catholic apologist for over four decades and is the founder and senior fellow of Catholic Answers. His books, Catholicism and Fundamentalism and What Catholics Really Believe, have been national bestsellers. Every once in a while, for amusement, he hikes the peaks of the Sierra Nevada in the depths of the Grand Canyon, according to his bio. And today, we'll be discussing his latest book from Catholic Answers, Booked for Life, the bibliographic memoir of an accidental apologist. Welcome to the show, Carl Keating.
Thank you, Pete. So, good to be with you.
Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule today to spend with us. So, to start our conversation today, perhaps what we should do is start with the basics, and for those of us who do not know, what is apologetics?
Well, maybe we should start with what many people think an apologist is. Sometimes I'll be introduced to a mixed audience, Catholics and Protestants, and the host will say that I'm a Catholic apologist, and I feel some need to explain just what that is. So I say that a Catholic apologist is someone who goes around the country apologizing for being a Catholic. And when I say that, the Catholics are a bit aghast. Their mouths hang open. But the Protestants tend to nod their heads as though thinking, yes, just as we always expected. And then I explain, well, that's not really what it means. The word apologist comes from apology, which itself ultimately comes from the Greek, a word that means an explanation or defense. So an apologist is somebody who gives an explanation or defense of something. It could be religion, it could be politics, it could be literature, it could be fine arts, whatever. So an apologist is someone who answers questions, tries to clear up misconceptions. And in Catholic terms, an apologist does work that we might say is prior to the work that an evangelist does. If the role of an evangelist is to bring someone into the fullness of the faith and ultimately into the Catholic Church, and parallel to that, to increase the knowledge and faith life of Catholics, the role of the apologist is more to clear brush away from those who are being held back from their appreciation of the Church by their own misconceptions or misconceptions that have been, you know, handed down to them or what have you. So the apologist has a role that is similar to that of the evangelist. It's not quite the same, though.
Gotcha. So what was it that drew you to becoming an apologist?
Well, nothing actually drew me. I backed into it. You mentioned at the start of the program that I've been working in apologetics for 40 years. It looks like it might be closer to 39.
Ah.
Sort of 40 lashes less one kind of thing. Because I think it was in 1979 that I performed my first overt apologetical act. One Sunday, my wife and I came out of Mass, and we and the other parishioners discovered that all the cars in the parking lot sported on their windshields some anti-Catholic leaflets or flyers. And I looked at them and I saw that they were attacking the priesthood and attacking the Eucharist. Nobody seemed inclined to do anything about these, even though they were printed up and distributed by a fundamentalist church that was just a mile down the street. So, having a little spare time, I decided I would write a reply. So, I spent actually more time than I expected writing a tract of my own, Now, this was in the days before the personal computer, so I had to use a Selectric typewriter. And then I had to take what I wrote and have it photo-reduced at a print shop that then ran off the copies. Hmm. So I had my tract or flyer, and a few weeks later, I distributed that on the cars in the parking lot at that fundamentalist church. And I have a distinct recollection, I have the image still in mind, standing across the street, leaning against a light standard, waiting for that service to end. And it ended, and the deacons or elders, whatever they might be called there, came out first, and they discovered that all these cars in the parking lot had flyers on them. They started to pick them off as fast as they could. They weren't fast enough. The people came out, and they found these flyers and took them with them. Well, that was about it for me. That was a one-time effort. I wasn't expecting to do anything else in apologetics. I had an interest in the faith. I'd read up a bit on it, but I didn't know a great amount at that time, and not enough to talk about it or write about it much. I was working as a law lawyer. I had a law practice, and that was going to be what I would do until my career ended. Well, I had put down for a mailing address a P.O. box that I rented. I put that on this flyer, and I made up the name of an organization, Catholic Answers, because I didn't want to put my own name down, because who was I? I was nobody. But if I had a group name, it sounded more official. But that was it. And there was some time later, I went to the post office and looked at the mailbox, and it was stuffed with letters. And most of them were from people at that fundamentalist church. Some were from Catholics. I don't know how they got the flyer. And they said, oh, this is good stuff. Send us your catalog. And I wrote back, said, I'm sorry, but everything's out of print. And then I had to start writing stuff. So I wrote six tracts, and then another six, so I had 12, and then 24. Eventually, I had 48, and that was for a good number of years, until I went full-time into apologetics, the bulk of Catholic Answers. But I have to say, I backed into apologetics. I had no plan to go that way, but once I found myself backing in, I found myself enjoying what I was doing. I felt compelled to learn more so I could answer questions better. You know, there's nothing wrong with saying you don't know when you're asked a question that you don't know the answers to.
Right.
That's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing you should never do is try to fake it. But I back in those years, I was saying I don't know too often. So I wanted to learn about the faith and how to convey it. And so I started to read, and I read widely. And my latest book, Book for Life, is about the books that made me a Catholic apologist.
And it's a great read, and we're going to dive into it deeper here as we go along. A couple other questions to set that conversation up. And I think it's perhaps the most interesting part about your story, Carl, is that you are a cradle Catholic. And we see a lot of people who come into the faith and immediately use their conversions as a foundation to defend the faith. And do you feel being a cradle Catholic gives you a different lens on the faith than what it has for others that come into it as converts?
I do. And I do think it's rather, I don't know what one would call it, humorous, or at least worthy of note, that most people who engage publicly in Catholic apologetics in the U.S. are converts. And so people tend to presume that I'm a convert, but I'm not. I am a cradle Catholic. I never fell away from the faith. I never ceased to practice the faith. It wasn't until I got into my 20s that I started to study it with any diligence. But I had never felt any distance from the faith. So that gives me a different background story than most public apologists. I think it also gives me a different perspective, because someone brought up in the faith, all things else being equal, might have more of a sense of the lived Catholic life and how rough and tumble it often is, and how historically, not just in our own time, how historically badly educated Catholics have been in their own religion. course, this is also true for Protestants in their religion, Eastern Orthodox in their religion. But, you know, most folks in the pews could not handle more than one or two questions being put to them before they would collapse. You know, they're just not trained that way, and they're not expected to be trained that way. But I do think that having been brought up Catholic, having never had a sense of participation in some other religion, has another advantage, too. There are some converts to the faith, including some people who have gone into public apologetics, who have never quite unloaded all of their non-Catholic past. And there have been times that I've had to counsel Catholic apologists whose names you might recognize to help them unload some of this baggage, which was actually interfering with the work they wanted to do as Catholic apologists. Sometimes they didn't realize that they were still having these mindsets, or they didn't realize that something they were teaching actually is not compatible with the Catholic faith, but was just taken as a matter of course, perhaps in the Protestant faith. So one of the advantages of not having ever been something else is that you're not likely to go into apologetics with a whole panoply of skewed notions. You may have areas that you don't know much, and you will, but you may not be starting out with things that you still think are right, but in fact are not compatible with the faith.
Good point. So one more question in this segment. Is apologetics still important today?
I think it's as important today as it's ever been. We live in a time where the biggest problem isn't so much that people are opposed to particular Catholic doctrines or moral teachings. I mean, they are, but that's not so much the way that they're phrased. It's not that they're coming out against the papacy as an institution or a particular moral teaching. The biggest problem today is indifference. You can prove to somebody that God exists, that Jesus Christ is divine, that he founded a church, that it is identical with the Catholic Church, that the seven sacraments exist and have certain attributes. You can prove all that syllogistically, and people will say, okay, I see that, I accept that, but so what? Why should that influence my life? And they just move on. So this is the big problem today. It's different from what it had been when I began in apologetics. I mean, not that those attitudes weren't present.
Thank you for
listening. But they weren't so predominant.
Find more about us at redboxmedia.com. Yeah, and it's a shame. We're going to get into more of that when we come back. We're going to take a quick break. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Redbox Media, and we'll be right back. Redbox Media programming is brought to you by...
We want to help others, especially in places of strife, such as the Holy Land, where Christianity is dwindling by the day. But how to help? Here's an easy way. Buying products through the Holy Land gift shop. Every product you purchase at myfranciscan.org/shop helps Christians support their families and stay in the Holy Land. Olive wood, embroidery, spices, and many more authentic products from the Holy Land are available right now at myfranciscan.org/shop. The Holy Land Gift Shop, bringing the Holy Land home.
Back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Socks, a Catholic book blogger. Today with us, we have Carl Keating, and we're just going to start talking about his latest book from Catholic Answers, Booked for Life, the bibliographic memoir of an accidental apologist. And Carl, in the first segment, we touched briefly upon how Catholic Answers began. Rather humorous story, as you pointed out yourself. When did it really start to take traction and you actually turned it into an entity rather than a P.O. box?
I would say it would be in the middle 80s. I began a newsletter in 1986. It was bi-monthly, then ultimately monthly. And that ended up getting a lot of subscribers. And then with the publication of my first book, Catholicism and Fundamentalism, in 1988, that brought a lot of attention not just to the apostolate, but to apologetics in general. And that book went on to be one of the top sellers ever for Ignatius Press. And so it had quite a bit of influence. And it's, you know, it still sells 30 years later. I still get a nice royalty check each year regarding that. So I would say by the late 80s, things had gotten to the point where most of my time was being spent on apologetics, not on my law practice. So by the end of 1987, actually, I closed my law practice. And in January of 88, I went full-time into apologetics. I brought two friends on board. And from there, things just gradually grew. Not with any particular plan. We just sort of let them unfold as they might. When the three of us began, I had no expectation that eventually, by the time I would leave the ministry, that Catholic Answers would have 45 employees, not just three.
Yeah, and that was my next question. Do you ever imagine it would grow into what it has become today?
No, because I didn't really have a plan or expectation to see it grow that way. I was simply wanting to handle issues and controversies as they came up to help as many people as we could find ways to explain and defend the faith. And as a matter of course, Catholic Answers grew, but there wasn't a concerted effort to see that it would reach certain milestones, say there were 5 years or so. Now, that didn't happen. More lately, of course, in more recent years, the planning is more sophisticated. But back in those early years, it was sort of catch as catch can, but it was moving well enough that I did feel comfortable leaving the law practice.
Mm. Gotcha. So under your book now, Booked for Life, what inspired you to write this volume?
Well, I'm always been a bibliophile. When I look across my many bookcases at home, I don't see books so much as friends. And I'm loyal to my friends, whether they're animate or inanimate. And I've got book friends that have been important to me in my intellectual and religious development. And I wanted to share them with others. So Book for Life is a memoir. It's a little unusual for memoir. Let me say it's not an autobiography, but it's probably as close to one as I'll ever come because it does have certain autobiographical elements to it. But I wanted to have a memoir where I don't merely look at the books that influence me. These are not book reports at all. But to share the books and how they change me and what I was able to do with them in hopes that the readers of my book will be inclined to go after some of these books and make them part of their own Catholic lives, part of their own libraries, and to learn the faith. As I say in the introduction, no two people will have the same set of books. Book for Life looks altogether at 25 books, five of which I set aside as the key ones in my development, and then another 20 that I would put at the second tier. But when you look at these 25 books, as I say, no one else is going to have quite the same collection. And all these books now are, you know, older. They go back at least 30 years. And some of them go back far beyond that. They were old out-of-print books when I discovered them. So different people have different sets. But I think that by going through my book, first, the reader will discover many books that he would want to have on his own shelf and that are still available. Some that still have to be tracked down, but still. And then I think he'd be inspired to look at maybe for other books that would be appropriate for his use at the present time. So that, in essence, he would come up eventually with his own collection of 25 books that would be key in his development. Whether he's going to be a Catholic apologist or just a well-read Catholic.
Right. And the concept for the book is great. You know, I've been reviewing books since 2012, and the book and the list you put together is, to me, a great foundation for people to grow from. So you've achieved that goal, I think, that you had. And you had an interesting quote in the beginning of the book, and it says, "Whatever I have learned, I have learned from masters of the craft," end quote. And you kind of alluded to this a little bit in your explanation there of why you wrote the book. Was there particular ones, you didn't mention five, but what were the particular ones that kind of rose to the top as basically the cream of the crop that really had an impact on you?
Well, as I do say in the introduction, as it turns out, the five books that proved most important to me were all written by English writers, or in one case, by what I call an honorary English writer. I think it comes out partly because from my youth, I've enjoyed the English writing style, the British writing style. And I mentioned in the introduction a novel I read as a child that influenced me. And I think it influenced me less for the story that it had and more for just the way the story was told in a kind of English or British style or format. So I've always been attracted to that. I've been attracted to the older apologetics that was manifested, say, in the 20s, 30s, and 40s of the last century in particular, a high level of gentlemanliness, a high level of good humor and wit, not jokesterism, but you know, wit of a good sort, a high intellectual level, a great deal of courtesy. One of the books I have here that's among the five top is called Is Christianity True? Mm-hmm. And it was between Arnold Lunn, later Sir Arnold Lunn, and C.E.M. Jode. Jode was, at the time, an agnostic philosopher. Later in life, he became a Christian and an Anglican. At the point of the exchange of letters between Jode and Lunn, Jode was curious about the Catholic faith, but certainly not all that amenable to it. But Lunn begins his opening to Jode, praising him for having had him over to his home. And Lunn observes on his wall some fine artistic reproductions. And he said that however much we may disagree with one another on points of religion, we certainly would have no personal animosity, because how can one have such animosity toward a man who likes such painters as Van Dyck? Mm-hmm. Okay, so you've got someone who bridges an intellectual chasm here with his cultural reference to a famous painter. These are two men who disagree profoundly at that time. Later on, they came more to agree as Jode became a Christian. But at the time, they were far apart, and yet they were very gentlemanly, very scholarly, and the way they wrote, I found very, not so much entertaining, but let's say winsome, mm-hmm. okay, and endearing even. So it is with the other books. You know, I've got five books altogether that I have made the main pillars of Book for Life. And under each of the five, I have three, four, five of the mm-hmm. second-tier books listed, right, because they deal with similar themes. The first book I list, though, is the one that was most important to me of all the books that I mentioned. And its title is Catholic Evidence Training Outlines. And it was the workbook used by the Catholic Evidence Guild in London to train its outdoor speakers. And it truly is in outline form. The edition I have is the last edition, the second edition from 1948. And this particular book was written by Maisie Ward with assistance from her husband, Frank Sheed. They would go on to found the Sheed and Ward Publishing Company, which for many years was a premier Catholic publishing company in the English-speaking world. But Catholic Governance Training Outlines, I found so useful because for almost any topic that would come to mind or any question that might be put to a Catholic by some antagonist, the answer was right there. Not just the answer, but the way the answer ought to be composed. The most important part for me in the book is a central section, which is how to conduct yourself as a Catholic speaker in public. And the tips there and the examples were just invaluable for me. And I just so much enjoyed the structure of that book, the content. I could just sit and flip through it back and forth, pick up whatever I needed. I found it so useful in my early development. I periodically go back to it and marvel at the concision that word and shape had there, how they put so much together on a single page to convey to the Catholic potential apologist what needed to be done, what needed to be said, you know, what things should not be done or should not be said if you want to be able to convey the faith accurately and winningly. You know, so it was very, very useful book for me.
All right. Well, we're going to take another quick break, and we're going to get back into some more of the titles you mentioned in the book. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. Catholic solution to the healthcare problem is here. Paying too much for your healthcare costs? Solidarity HealthShare is a healthcare sharing ministry which provides an ethical way to fund healthcare costs while protecting and practicing our Catholic beliefs. Best yet, Solidarity HealthShare's members are exempt from the fines and penalties in the Affordable Care Act. For more info, call 844-313-4999. Again, that's 844-313-4999, or visit SolidarityHealthShare.org. That's SolidarityHealthShare.org. Back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. We're here today with Carl Keating discussing his book, Booked for Life, a great, great memoir about books that have influenced Carl. And one of the things you mentioned last segment, Carl, was we were talking about the book, Is Christianity True? And one of the things you brought up that kind of struck me is how gentlemanly the two authors of those letters were towards each other. And it's probably something we should all take a good, hard, long look at these days in how we handle bringing other people to the faith. Because sometimes you can be a little pointed, I think, and that's not the way to win people.
No, I think I mentioned the book in an episode where I was at an event some years ago on the East Coast or near it. It was a Catholic social event, and I walked into the kitchen at the lodge where it was being held. And there I discovered the late Warren Carroll, one of the founders of Christendom College, in an argument with a taller, much younger man. And they were arguing how we ought to be discussing the faith with Protestants. And Carroll was famous for never having lost his cool. But here, in this case, he was losing his cool in public. Because the other guy was saying the only way to bring a Protestant into the church is to insult him into the church and to let him know what a hopeless case he is and so on and so forth. And Carroll, naturally enough, said that that's no way at all to treat anybody else. And besides that, it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Okay, so right. you can't browbeat anybody into the church. So Carroll was of the old line of school of Gentlemanliness is winningness. It's winsome. It helps, doesn't hurt. Mm-hmm. This other fellow, who styled himself the country's best apologist, even though he admitted never having brought anybody into the church, he was a different kind of school, saying, you know, the more fisticuffs, the better. And we find a lot of that still on the internet, mm-hmm. at Facebook and other places, where people talk about the faith or argue about it. They don't argue about it in a mode that's constructive.
Right.
You can disagree considerably with somebody, but how you conduct the disagreement makes all the difference in the world as to whether you can win that person's heart and mind.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention the hearts and minds of those who might be looking over their shoulders, right?
Correct.
So we've got this issue nowadays on the internet because people are often writing anonymously, or even if they're using their actual names, they think that somehow they're off the courtesy clock,
right.
and the courtesy that they use in everyday life doesn't apply on the internet. And you end up with nothing but heat, very little light
right.
at all. So, but in the books that I look at here, in Book for Life, it's the other way around. You know, you have such a reservoir of goodwill on both sides, even though often very deep disagreements, that the reader can see what the arguments are and can really make a judgment because you get the picture. And so the five books that I list as my chief ones all have that particular attribute. You know, you've got people who are discussing arguments and how to deal with them and giving arguments, and they do it in a way that is challenging but never off-putting.
Right, yeah. And you mentioned also last segment an author, Frank Sheed, who has numerous articles out there. You also talk about Theology for Beginners and Theology Insanity. Why is Frank Sheed a good pick to put on reader shelves?
Well, Sheed, I think, was the top Catholic apologist of the 20th century, at least in English-speaking countries, maybe in the world. And the second book I list here after Catholic Evidence, Trading Outlines, which he co-wrote with his wife, although she had the bigger part. The second book he wrote on his own, it's called Theology and Sanity. The only thing I don't like about it is the title, because the word sanity makes people think it's about psychology, and it's not. Sheed's thesis in the book is this. He said, look, there are two parts to reality, the material world that we see around us and the immaterial or spiritual world. If you reject one of those two worlds, if you reject half of reality, you're not really sane. If you want to be truly sane, you need to accept both halves and understand them well.
Mm-hmm.
His book, Theology and Sanity, has the best explanation in simple terms of the Trinity that I've ever come across. And once I saw how he could handle that rather abstruse dogma, I could see how he and Maisie Ward in Catholic Evidence Training Outlines and elsewhere could say that when the Catholic Evidence Guild went out to Hyde Park in London to speak at Speaker's Corner, the lectures that attracted the biggest crowds were on the Trinity of all things, because these are such novel ideas to people who have never been taught what the Trinity was. All they thought was that 3 = 1, which of course is nonsense. 3 = 1, see? At that level, it's meaningless. But when you actually explain what the Trinity is, 3 distinct persons, 1 divine nature, if you explain what those are, it becomes fascinating to people. And the folks in the Catholic Evidence Guild in London saw that. The truths of the Catholic faith get into the mind, they lodge there, and people want to draw conclusions from them, and they get excited about them. And these are the kinds of things that she talks about in Theology and Sanity. The subtitle that we use in this book here is The Faith Can Be Exciting If You Present It Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that part's very important. You have to present it right, because you can have, and I mentioned in my comments about this particular book, you can have people who explain the Trinity in such a way that they explain it away, and they don't draw people toward it, but make them want to leave. The Trinity is the number one Catholic doctrine, the number one Christian doctrine, because it's about God's own inner nature. There's nothing more important than that. Everything else is secondary. And yet, most Christians don't think about the Trinity at all. As such, I mean, they know Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, but they don't think about, what is the Trinity? What's that mean? You know, what's the relationship between the Trinity and my existence?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They don't think those ways. So she explains why they ought to be thinking those ways. So those are some of the things in Theology and Sanity. So as I say, I'm very much impressed by Sheed. I think he was the number one apologist of our era. And aside from Theology and Sanity, I've also got mentioned at the second tier his book, Theology for Beginners, which is a wonderful introduction to the faith. Yeah,
I've read that one myself. Now, a thing I think that a series that you've put in your list of 25 here that really helped me when I first came into the faith was Radio Replies. And I'm a convert, It was a great resource for me. And the thing that when I came into the faith, I didn't come into the faith with any preconceived notions. There was no stumbling blocks for me. My conversion was pretty simple, actually. I came from the United Church of Christ, but my exposure to it was fairly limited as we didn't attend church services very often. So I was basically coming with a clean slate. So I didn't hit a lot of stumbling blocks that some people do, like with Mary or the Eucharist or any of that. So I was basically just an open sponge just looking for water. So I was looking for knowledge, not trying to debate anything. And Radio Applies to me was an excellent series. So can you tell us a little bit about your thoughts on that three-volume series?
Yeah. Radio Replies started with a radio program in Australia that was hosted by Father Leslie Rumble. And he published a book collecting his Q&As from the show. And it was discovered by an American priest, Mortimer Carty, and the two got together. And they continued the series and published ultimately three volumes, several thousand questions with answers, all of them done up by Father Rumble. There's a lot of overlap in the questions from one volume to the other. But if you reduce them, you still got several thousand distinct questions. So it covers almost everything you can imagine.
Yeah.
And the nice thing about it is that Rumble didn't fake the questions. These were real questions he got. Sometimes you get books written by priests where they will make up the questions and then provide answers.
Yes.
And historically, the questions were sort of only at the second level of toughness. You know, they weren't the real doozies that people, in fact, throw out at you.
Mm-hmm.
But Rumble supplied the real questions, and he gave great answers. And so you can go through these, and you know, he answered with wit and with sincerity and with references. And most of the answers are fairly short. And you can go through several at a single sitting and learn a lot. And in a few weeks, you've absorbed a lot of the Catholic faith. And not only that, you know how to answer most of the questions that could ever be put to you about what the Catholic Church teaches and what it's been historically.
Mm-hmm. Another title you have in here, and you know, sometimes divine intervention is humorous, is Fundamentals of Catholic Dogma. My spiritual director just gave me a copy of that last week. So, so what can you tell us about that haven't cracked open that one yet?
Fundamentals of Catholic Dogma is a quasi-outline book. It's a fat tome by a priest, Professor Dr. Ludwig Ott. And for decades, it was a standard manual in seminaries. It has every Catholic teaching. Imagine the Catechism of the Catholic Church with more technical detail, actually, in many regards. Because you've got quotations from not just patristic sources, but going through the Reformation on both sides. He gives you the Latin and the Greek or the German, whatever the case may be, provides you the translation. It's a wonderful book for a serious student who really wants to learn every element of the faith. It's sort of like a dictionary or a concise encyclopedia. You've got to be a bit devoted. It doesn't have a plot to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you're reading a novel. It's not like Theology and Sanity or the other books by Sheed that will carry you along just with their language. Odd is not that way. But it's got so much stuff in it that a person who really wants to know any element of the faith, any doctrine at all in depth, can find it very quickly in just a few pages by using Livnagot's book.
All right. We're going to take one more quick break, and we'll come back and wrap this up with a few more titles. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media, and we'll be right back. In a consumer-driven world where we're told we need and deserve more, Susan Muto, Executive Director of the Epiphany Association, reminds us that gratefulness is a gift from God. In Gratefulness, the Habit of a Grace-Filled Life, she reveals that grateful living is not another new fad, but has been the way of saints and Christian mystics for centuries. In this insightful, inspiring book, she explores how life-changing a spirit of gratefulness can be by using both personal and well-known examples of the struggles and rewards of grateful living. Find Gratefulness by Susan Muto at AveMariaPress.com or look for it wherever books and ebooks are sold. Shelf here on Redbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. We've been spending the day with Carl Keating and talking about his book, Booked for Life, the Bibliographic Memoir of an Accidental Apologist. And Carl, we've covered some good ground here. And to lead off this segment, I'm going to have to publicly say, Carl, my wife's not going to be happy with you because I'm going to end up buying a bunch of books because of this.
Actually, you'll find it makes your marriage stronger, Pete. Don't worry about it.
Okay. One of the things you said that I thought was rather intriguing, and I'd like to get you to give a little more detail on it, is you quoted that infamous quote from Venerable Fulton Sheen when he says, "There are not over 100 people in the United States who hate the Catholic Church. There are millions, however, who hate what they wrongly believe to be the Catholic Church, which is, of course, quite a different thing," end quote. And you said in the next paragraph in that book that those words today seem stilted and imprecise. How so?
Well, nowadays, as I said earlier, I think that we don't find so many people who actually hate the Catholic faith. They don't take enough interest in it to hate it. You can't really hate something that you have no interest in. You have to have a certain level of interest just to get the hate going. So, however true that might have been when Sheen first said that, which was, I think, in the 1920s or so, originally, nowadays is a different situation. Our bigger problem is a kind of indifference, a lack of interest in religion. Not so much an overt opposition to it, but a lack of interest. Now, one thing that does mean is that we don't meet so many people who are digging their heels in with an anti-Catholic philosophy that needs to be overcome in order for us to evangelize them. They're sort of blank slates. But the other part is that since they don't have this pre-existing even antagonism that comes from an interest in Catholicism, they don't even have that, it's a little difficult often to get them to be interested in the truths that we have to share. Because they tend to say, well, so what? Okay, you have your truth, I have my truth. It's that kind of thing.
Right. Right. And how difficult does that play into our hands these days when we're trying to bring people to the faith? Because you're right. It's people just don't care. It's sad.
It is. But the thing is, if you can sit down with them and start to talk about these things, I'll give you an example. I had a priest friend who was a professor at a Catholic school, at a college. And there was another priest there who wanted to attract students, many of them just nominal Catholics, to his particular course. So he decided he needed an exotic title. So he called it Underground Catholicism. And the students just signed up in droves, a standing room only, because he promised to tell them the inside secrets about the Catholic Church and its teachings. And so they would come week after week, and they were just lapping it up. This is good stuff, they said. And his class was very popular. And my priest friend said that other priests never had the heart to tell anybody that he was simply teaching them from the Baltimore Catechism. He was simply teaching them a child's catechism. Okay, but this was all new to them. And it was exotic, and it was exciting. See?
Yeah.
So it's much like, you know, in recent times we've had this great interest in Dr. Jordan Peterson and his his books and so on. But what he actually says in his books are very straightforward things that used to be a matter of course. But now to young people, they look so interesting, so exciting, because they're brand new. These young people had never been giving these basic sort of rules for life before. Mm-hmm. And so now they're being attracted to them, for partly for their novelty, partly for their common sense. Well, so it is, more importantly, with the Catholic faith. You can take people such as those, or people of any age, who have no particular interest in religion, but if you sit down with them and start to walk them through the Catholic faith, the very fact that they have no interest means they have no antagonism. They're just waiting there. They're receptive. And if you take the time, they can become excited because they see the truth in the faith, and they see a purpose in their lives. And those things, for many people, have been absent the whole of their adult lives. And now they see something that gives meaning to them and something that sets goals for them. And that's exciting. And that's what the Catholic faith really is, because it is the explanation of why we're here. Going back to the child's catechism, one of the first questions is, why did God make you? And the answer is, God made me to know him, to love him, and to serve him in this life, and to be happy with him forever in the next. That's the whole story. I mean, that's the whole catechism right there. But if you share that with people who have, in essence, no background, and thus are indifferent, you can begin to see eyes light up. So in some ways, it's more difficult than it used to be, because you don't come with people against people so much, or two people who have a pre-existing strong Christian faith of some other sort. But you also have opportunities that you maybe didn't have at some time in the past.
And this conversation, I think, kind of takes us into another section of your book where you talk about the author Ronald Knox in his book Difficulties, and you subtitled that "Recognize that mankind is fallen." If a person doesn't recognize that, then they're not going to see a need for any kind of faith, because they're just lolly-lolling along in life and everything's peachy keen. Tell us about Knox's book Difficulties?
Okay, this is another exchange of letters, as was the one called "Is Christianity True?" These letters were exchanged in the early 1930s between then Father Ronald Knox, himself a convert to the faith, and the not yet Catholic Arnold Lunn, who in the other book already was a Catholic, but in this one he was not quite a Catholic. He was brought into the Catholic Church a couple years later by Father Knox. But here, Lunn is a Christian, but not yet a Catholic, but he's sympathetic to the Catholic Church, but he poses really tough questions to Knox. This is my number one favorite non-inspired Catholic book, put it that way, of all the books that are out there. Unfortunately, it's out of print. I wish some major publisher would bring it back in print. I think it's a wonderful book. These are two of my favorite writers. They're both top Catholic apologists. Lunn spent most of the rest of his life, once he became Catholic, in two fields. One, Catholic apologetics, and the other, Olympic skiing. He was the one who invented the slalom ski race for the Olympics. So then you got Knox, who translated the Bible on his own from the Vulgate, the Latin, the last man to have done that. And on the other side, he wrote detective stories. So, I mean, a man of many talents, and both men were, really. And so Difficulties is their exchange, a very high level of courtesy, a high level of winsomeness and wit, very accessible writing, As I say, the only bad thing about the book is that it's no longer in print, and you have to track it down at a used bookstore.
Hmm. So, Carl, I have one more question for you today, and a lot of us younger folk turn to you as kind of the forerunner of apologetics, and then, as you said, the first step to evangelization. So the question's this. If you had 30 minutes in a room with a non-believer, what would you tell them to at least engage the conversation and get them to start thinking about the faith?
I wouldn't tell them so much. I'd start with some questions. Who are you? Why are you here? Where are you going? You know, why are you not somebody else? Why are you not non-existent? You know, and are you lost on the way? I would ask those questions to get them to start to think. Then I'd ask, or I wouldn't ask, I'd start to share my understanding of what reality is. I go back to the Frank Sheet idea. There are two parts of reality, the material world and the immaterial world. They're equally real, and we need to understand that. And then I would explain what that means. And I walk these folks through this to give them a different mindset. Later on, we can talk about the particulars of the Catholic faith and, you know, the history of the papacy and things like that. But at the beginning, I would just try to paint a picture of what reality is and how most people nowadays live in a kind of unreality. They're missing so much, not just the supernatural world, but they're also missing much about the natural world, because they think so much is deterministic. They don't believe there's really free will. There's, you know, so much unhappiness that clouds their lives, so much pain and misery of various sorts. And so I would try to get behind those things and to show them that the answers that they want are found in Jesus Christ, who left behind him a single church, which is precisely the Catholic Church. And if they want to maximize their understanding of reality and of their own lives, and they want to be truly happy, not just now, but especially in the long run, they need to learn about this church. They need to learn what it teaches. And they need, if the grace is given to them, to submit to it, to accept what Christ teaches, and to say to themselves and to others, yes, this is true, and I accept it, and I want it for my own life.
Good stuff. Well, Carl, that's all we have time for today. And before we wrap up, where can people find your new book, Booked for Life?
Well, certainly at Catholic.com, the publisher, also at Amazon.com, where they can also find my many other books.
Awesome. Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule today, Carl, and spending it with us. Any closing thoughts?
Well, no, Pete, I just hope that all of our listeners become readers and not just hearers of the word. Yes. We need to be both. So keep listening to this podcast, but also keep reading good Catholic stuff.
Awesome. Thank you again, Carl. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Redbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. And until next time, God bless. Redbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
I learned how many people we could help and how good you feel after you've helped others.
I know Lent is about giving, so I want to give.
These kids are talking about CRS Rice Bowl, a Lenten program known by generations of Catholic families. Children love it because they experience different cultures and gain a lasting impression of the people they are helping. You can bring CRS Rice Bowl into your home and experience the joy of seeing your children or grandchildren find new meaning in Lent. Visit crsricebowl.org to get started.
Rice Bowl inspired me to pray more and to pray for those who are less fortunate.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.